it did have an increase. You also have an increase of people who ride it free. So you can't say that you have an increase in ridership. You're not making the money doing it. Thank you.
I'm going to call. I apologize. I'm confusing our process with other agencies' processes. So we're going to call up on the item 6C. We have several people who want to be heard. I'll call you up now. Michael Richardson, Jackie Cornejo, and Jason Hill, and Khalid Al-Alim. I think we have four seats up there, so there should be one for everybody. Who would like to go first? Ms. Cornejo?
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Richardson. I'm with LA Unified Rebuild Program. And the primary reason for me being here is to offer whatever assistance, technical assistance that we can to Skanska and to advise about our local hire program and what we do as far as tracking the numbers, ethnicity, and people working on all of our projects, right? So that's the primary reason that I'm here, to offer assistance, technical support if it's needed, and to make sure that our WeBuild participants, our local residents in our pre-apprenticeship program, have an opportunity to access the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Ms. Correo?
Hi, my name is Jackie Cornejo. I'm the director of the Construction Careers Project for the LA Alliance for a New Economy. We're part of a coalition of community groups that has advocating for breaking the cycles of poverty in some of our hardest-hit communities by the recession. We have been advocates of the construction career policy, not only here at the Expo Authority, but also at Metro. We're here today to flag some serious employment accountability issues on Phase 2. As we know, Phase 2 is covered by a construction careers policy that has a project labor agreement with 30% local hire. This policy is groundbreaking because it has allowed people from economically disadvantaged communities to be able to access quality middle-class construction jobs. We ask that Skanska Rados disclose their progress on their local hire requirements. And so we support item 6C, the motion to instruct the CEO to identify the proper measures to ensure that there is proper reporting and accountability. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jason Hill, let me call, I think, I can't read the handwriting. Is it Hector? What's your last name? Wesso, okay. Come on up. Mr. Hill.
Hi, my name is Jason Hill. I'm a member of the L.A. Black Worker Center. I'm also a deacon at Solid Rock Baptist Church, which is in South Los Angeles. I'm here supporting Motion 6C. As you know, our community is 50% either unemployed or underemployed, and we're just outraged that the Skanska and Rados has not disclosed their hiring process. As you know, our community is suffering right now. We're losing a lot of young men to drugs, alcohol, teenage pregnancy, because they don't have anything to do. An idle mind is the devil's workshop. We need compliance to ensure that this rail system has equity, diversity, and equitability. We need the Skankas and Rados to uphold their bargain, their end of the bargain, and let the people in our community get these jobs for training and experience in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Al-Alim.
Thank you. My name is Khalid Al-Alim. I am the vice president of the Park Mesa Heights Community Council, and we already have it on record that we are very displeased at the fact that the Crenshaw LAX line is above grade. But beside that point, we want to make it clear that we have always been unwavering in our support of the community organizations that are here today. We will continue to work with these organizations. We want to make sure that this issue does not become a problem or a concern in the Hyde Park, Park Mesa Heights area. So with that, we would ask that this compliance and this transparency be enforced. And I want to make sure on behalf of the Park Mesa Heights Community Council that we are in support of this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. And Hector Weissel.
Thank you. My name is Hector Weissel. I'm a workforce development professional, and I work with several WorkSource centers in the city and the county of Los Angeles, and I'm also part of the Construction Careers Coalition that is being spearheaded by Lane. I'm here today to kindly request that you please support Motion 6C and direct the CEO to demand compliance and transparency with the contract holders with Expo 2. Besides just being an issue of transportation and access, this is a jobs bill, a very important jobs bill to the communities hardest hit by the economy in Los Angeles City and the county. So please hold contractors accountable to the terms of transparency and accountability for who they hire, practices, and all of that pertinent information. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That closes the public comment period. On the condemnation items, we will take them separately. Next item.
Item five, consent calendar. 5A, phase 1 and phase 2 monthly contract actions, and 5B, phase 2 Thomas Coburn LLP contract amendment.
Okay. Is there any moved by Wesson, second by O'Connor. Without discussion, the consent calendar is approved. Next item is item 6.
6A, phase 2 Santa Monica waterline betterment.
Okay. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we've talked, the next couple items are betterments requested by the City of Santa Monica. They have agreed to pay for these betterments, and we've been working for some time with the city. The first one, item 6A, is a betterment for their water line. We have to relocate the water line along Colorado Avenue. They envision, as a result of light rail, development adjacent to the light rail, transit-oriented development that will be much higher density. They're going to need additional capacity in their water system. So they have asked that we increase, as long as we're relocating the line, we increase the sizes and add some additional lines, and they've agreed to pay for it. The total amount that we're asking approval for, contingent upon their payment, is $1.75 million with approval to issue a contract modification to the contractor for an amount not to exceed $1,375,000. The difference would go to contingency and to cover some of our increased costs for oversight.
Okay, and it is consistent with consistent with the budget.
Yes, I mean this would be funded outside of our budget, so there will be no funds from.
Oh, this is being paid for by the City of Santa Monica.
It's going to be paid for by the City of Santa Monica.
Okay, so it's the betterment. Okay, any discussion on this? Moved by O'Connor, seconded by Bonin, without objection. Unanimous vote. 6B.
6B, phase 2 Santa Monica Terminus betterment.
Yeah, this one we've talked about. The board has previously approved preliminary engineering. Again, a request by the City of Santa Monica to realign the terminus. It does a couple of things. One, it provides for additional property for them to develop immediately adjacent to the station. It also provides much better access to Colorado Avenue, the pier, the 3rd Street Promenade, et cetera. So we've been working with the city on this. They have agreed to pay the betterment cost of $5.9 million. We're asking authority to enter into a contract modification for $4.9 million to do the actual design and construction work, and then the remainder would go into a contingency and our oversight costs. And, again, this would be contingent upon City of Santa Monica funding this betterment.
Is there any discussion on this item?
I'll move it.
Moved by O'Connor, seconded by Bonin, without objection. 6B is approved. Item 6C.
6C, motion by Supervisor Mark Billy Thomas and Councilmember Herb Wesson.
Chairman, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The May meeting, that is May 2010, this board unanimously approved a motion that initiated the development of a construction careers policy and an attended or attached project labor agreement. The objective, as all of us will recall, was to implement a policy and execute related agreements that would extend the economic benefits and opportunities, locally funded transit investment to local communities, promote job creation at the local level, workforce, and small business development, and minimize the labor misunderstandings and protect worker safety on phase two of the Exposition Light Rail project. Expo staff proposed construction careers policy at the September 2010 board meeting that was adopted unanimously by this board. In addition, in March of following the board, once again, unanimously approved phase two, and we proceeded from that point forward. And I think it's worth reminding everyone that we had essentially five key guiding principles with this policy. One was transparency. Two was accountability. Three was simplicity. Four was minimal administrative cost. And ultimately, five, uniformity, that is consistency with other precedent-setting PLAs in the region. Now, central to the principle of transparency is that of timely reporting of complete data on the authority's website that allows the public to track the progress being made. Those who have come to testify today, as well as those of us who are decision makers, policy makers, ought to be able to, with ease, track the progress. A lot of work went into making sure that these policies were put together carefully. The staff of this authority spent hours negotiating at the board's direction. Now it seems to me that it's most appropriate that we be able to monitor accordingly. This is the essence of transparency. One of the points to be made is that the contractor is concerned about compliance and not reporting outside of the boundaries, as they interpret it, of the contract. It seems to me that the board has an opportunity and or a responsibility consistent with its intent to maximize the information in an appropriate way. Therefore, the motion by Director Wesson and myself directs the CEO in consultation with the authority's counsel, and for that matter, Metro's counsel, put back in the appropriate setting, if that's closed session, that's fine, in October this year at our next board meeting, on all available avenues to ensure the complete and timely reporting of data for local jobs, as is one of the main elements of the agreement. The motion sets that forth in a rather explicit way. I simply wish to move that and say that it is all for the good if we can accomplish this. Mr. Thorpe will attest to the fact that another element of this, the data that is reported out with respect to small business. And my own observation with the adoption of similar policies at the County of Los Angeles make it abundantly clear to me that while the local hiring is moving along effectively, but we need to maximize the transparency to measure it here at Expo, it is the small business component that seems to be lagging. I wouldn't be surprised if such were the case in other jurisdictions as well. Like the city of Los Angeles is one example. follow-up scenario, I want to say that the area in which we put a lot of energy to try to make sure it was included is one of the areas in which we are having a challenge. That is the small business development piece of it. I go back to the thrust of the motion, namely that of local jobs. Contractor is obliged to make sure that we can track it fully, transparently. That is not the case today. They represent that it is not consistent with the requirements of the contract. Therefore, they're reluctant to do anything that might cause them to be out of compliance. These instructions, we trust that you will cause them to understand that compliance is the order of the day. Transparency and accountability is not inconsistent with the wishes of the board. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Thorpe, what have they, according to the motion, your staff is, you or your staff have been trying to get information from the contractor? What is the information that they are required to give, and what is the information that they are not giving? And are they not giving information that they are required to give us?
They're giving the information that they're required to.
Which is part of
the construction careers policy. We required them to report back on the total hours that went to the local construction careers, the zip codes along the line, the local, so they're reporting the local zip codes that the craft workers are coming out of. And every month we report that to this board as to how many hours went to local hires. And so they're complying with that. The ethnicity issue is one that we did not require as part of our contract, and so far the contractor has been reluctant to release that information.
Well, let's talk about race and ethnicity. I'm trying to understand what the issue is because...
Not disclosed.
But this is not a race and ethnicity issue. It was a unemployment. The areas that were targeted for the local worker, local hire program, were based on unemployment statistics exclusively. They were, to the best of my recollection, there was no race or ethnicity, gender, or any other kind of factor other than the zip codes that were extensively discussed. So I'm just trying to, where did the race in it, what is the difference, why do we want to know, aside from the fact we never asked for it, and it wasn't part of the program, why do we want to know what the race and ethnicity and the gender of people who are hired from the targeted zip codes, which was the original, and as I understand it, the exclusive criteria for the local hire program?
I'm glad to answer it. The fuller of the reporting out, the better picture we can get of how, in fact, the hiring isn't indeed taking place. And I do not think race and or ethnicity or gender, for that matter, are irrelevant. I would further add that it's, it comports with the typical standards of transparency that we've seen in other projects, not the least of which is the County of Los Angeles itself. It gives a fuller report of what's going on and who's hired and whether it, in fact, reflects the composition of the communities that are defined, the communities that are defined as local or targeted communities. Absent that data, you just don't know.
If someone lives in the zip code that is targeted by the local hiring program, or that qualifies for the local hiring program, does it matter what their race or ethnicity is?
It does.
Well, that wasn't the understanding that I had. I'm not sure it was ever discussed in terms of race and ethnicity. It was discussed exclusively in terms of percentage of the zip codes. It's a percentage of poverty, percentage of the poverty line, and the distance from the project corridor itself. I think it was 5 miles on either side, and the other criterion was the percentage of, what was it, 120% of poverty? I forgot what the percentage is.
Of the county, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no debate about that.
Yeah, so where, I mean, I'm just asking where does race fit into this?
It was never discussed as part of the local hiring program. It was in the DBE program and some of the other things, but in this particular issue in the local hiring program, it was not a race ethnicity issue. It was a percentage of poverty issue and a geography issue.
Yeah, let me just say it in these terms then, if I may. It is hardly uncommon when you look at unemployment data to index it by ethnicity, age, and a number of other indices. This then seeks to give a full report on how well the local hire program is proceeding. It is, in fact, similar to what is happening with the One Search program that we have in the county of Los Angeles. It is not a question of whether this was debated when the policy or program was adopted. It is this one director's mind assumed that when you report the data, you report it as fully as possible. Now, there's nothing extraordinary about reporting this data. As I said, unemployment data does go to those demographic specifics. If we, in part, are seeking to address crisis of unemployment in the particular communities under concern, then we need to know what it really does look like. So it's not a matter of it being anything that's extraordinary. It's a matter of it being assumed that you know as fully as possible what the information is so that you can track the success in every way meaningful or possible.
Mr. Wilson? Yeah, I'm just curious. I don't see what the problem is. I think that data could be helpful. I don't understand it. Do we have a rep here from Skanska?
Is there somebody from Skanska here?
Mr. Chair,
hang on one second.
We have one of the consultants to Skanska.
You're not here on this item?
No.
Okay. Mr.
Then why are you here, Mr. Harris, if you're not here to speak on that?
Another relevant thought, whether or not they're actually mandated to give us this information, why would they be hesitant to provide it to us?
Well, particularly
what harm
could
there be in us obtaining that information?
The only response, we've requested it on numerous occasions, and their only response is against company policy.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask the question.
Go ahead.
Through the chair. Mr. Thorpe, is it your understanding that the company does possess or maintain the data in question?
I believe so, yes.
So it's really a question of not disclosing it to the authority rather than them not having it or collecting it, correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
On that basis, Mr. Chairman and colleagues, it seems to me it's even more to the point that it's useful information. Why would they collect it? Because it's useful to know. And that's essentially the thrust of the motion, and it comports with the notion of transparency and accountability in my mind.
Are you certain that they collect the information about their employees by ethnicity and race?
That's what I was told, but I'm not certain, no.
So, Mr. Chairman,
but in any case, I just was curious whether they actually, I understood from, I assumed that this was an added level of administrative responsibility that they were reticent to undertake.
No.
If they have undertaken it already and just want to keep it to themselves, that's one thing. Then it really makes their case, they have a case to make, much weaker in my mind. Anyway, it's something that what I think we should do is you've asked for a report back next month. I think we should get that report back. I think you should get that information from them, in addition to all the information that the motion asks you to find out, the legalities and all that stuff, that you find out what data they have compiled already. And and then take it from there. I mean, in the one instance where I'm aware of a, I think it's in your district, Mr. Ridley Thomas, of the county, and this a project of the South Health Center, right. I forgot which one it is, that we have the that data. I'm not sure. I could hypothesize, but I don't wish to do that. I just the overwhelming percentage of the employees that have been hired on the local hiring program appear to be from the targeted area, and in almost every case, are racial and ethnic minorities. That's what it appeared to me on the sheet that I saw. I doubt if it would be much different on this project or any other project. Anyway, I just my concern was we never made this an issue in the first place when we did the local hiring program, and I know there's an effort being undertaken to do this in other jurisdictions, and it may be a good thing, may not be a relevant thing, but. This was never constituted as a race or ethnicity-based program. It was a income and geography-based program. But I understand your point, and I don't, don't quibble with it.
Last thing for me, and I won't speak again where it relates to this issue. I don't think it's a race-based issue. I think it's information that would be good for us, number one, to have. And if we need to in the future, we should come up, incorporate language so that we can get that type of data. And to Mr. Harris, who is a consultant for SCANSA and here today, I would highly recommend that you go back and you help them find a way to give us what we want. I do not think that that is a very difficult ask. Could you do that?
Okay, so let's put this over for next week, for next month, ask you to come back, respond to the provision, to the request of the motion.
Yes, we and wouldn't it, put it over. We'd adopt it, and they are supposed to come back.
Well, we can do that. Or
that's what the motion is.
That's fine. And then we need, excuse me a second, yeah. We'd need guidance from the council next month as to whether we can have this discussion full session or whether it's necessary.
Right.
We'll do so.
And Mr. Chair, let it let the record reflect that it has been represented by the entity in question that they do, in fact, have the data, and they do collect it.
Referenced by whom?
By the representatives, the highest level in that entity. They do collect
the it. Entity, you mean the contractor?
Precisely.
They represented that to you?
Correct. Similar to what the CEO has suggested by way of inference minimally. So,
well, Mr. Harris, are you aware whether the company keeps that information? Why do you track it? Well, recognizing that you're not speaking necessarily for the company, but since you're an expert in this field, why would they track it? Why do you think they would track it, having not been required to do so with them? So you acknowledge or confirm that they have been tracking? Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Without objection, motion will be approved and we'll discuss the report back from you at the next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Next item, Mr. Sharp, 6D. Oh, this is, sorry, I think I have to adjourn the meeting or recess?
We need to adjourn the regular meeting and open for public hearing.
Before I adjourn the meeting, can the council explain to me why we have to adjourn the meeting? Isn't this on the regular meeting agenda?
It is, but it is a separate hearing for the purpose of adoption of this resolution of necessity.
It's a separate hearing, but it's the same. It's on the same meeting's agenda. I'm just reluctant to adjourn a meeting. I don't even know why we need to recess. It's item 6D. It's 6D and 6E. I don't want to adjourn or recess a meeting that has been legally noticed. This is a separate hearing. We've held the public hearing has been separate from all the other public comment. Is there any jeopardy in just doing it the way I'm suggesting?
As long as it is made clear this is a separate hearing, I do not see any reason.
Separate from what?
Separate from the other items on the agenda.
That's why it's called 6D and 6E. 6D and E are separate from one another. Okay, so this is a separate hearing. Item 6D and 6E will be separate hearings on two individual separate pieces of property on an eminent domain proceeding. Okay? We'll start with 6D. 6D, like in David.
Item 6D, public hearing and adopt resolution of necessity, parcel number E2-0204, excuse me, APN 4290-011-021.
Okay. Rick, you want to introduce this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The next two items are condemnation issues. There are two pieces of property that are necessary for us to keep the contractor moving forward. One of them is on National for a traction power substation. The other location is on Colorado Avenue. Colorado Avenue is the critical path to the entire project being completed. If we have to go through condemnation, it will take at least 5 to 6 months to obtain an order of possession. So it is very important that we proceed forward today. We will continue to negotiate in hopes of reaching an agreement with the property owners, but to the extent we can, it's very important that we move forward. We have Velma Marshall here, who is from Metro that handles our real estate acquisition, and she's here to open the hearing or continue with the hearing.
Hey, before we hear from her, or maybe we should, we have a letter from the attorney representing this property owner who indicates that an offer, that no sufficient offer by us has been made.
Offer has been made, sir.
An offer has been made?
Yes.
It just hasn't been high enough for them to...
Okay, I see. That's what no sufficient offer has been made. The sufficiency is related to the price tag. Okay.
Yes.
I should have known that. Thank you. Velma, you want to say anything further?
Yes. The purpose of this public hearing is to determine the necessity for the acquisition of the parcel identified as Los Angeles County Assessor Parcel Number 4290-11-21, more commonly known as 430 Colorado Avenue in the city of Santa Monica. The staff report addresses the following questions: whether the public hearing and interest require the project, whether the project is planned and located in the manner that would be the most compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury, whether the property interest is necessary for the proposed project, and whether an offer was made to the owner of record. The staff report has been given to the board secretary for inclusion in the official records of this public hearing. The parcel included in this action is required for the construction and operation of a light rail station site and related uses in connection with the construction and operation of the Exposition Light Rail Transit Project Phase 2. The light rail project will provide significant improvements in transportation and attendant access to economic opportunities for low-income, elderly, and transit-dependent persons living in the Los Angeles, Santa Monica, West Side area. The environmental effects associated with the acquisition and construction of the Exposition Light Rail Project were evaluated in the final environmental impact report and environmental impact statement, which was certified by this board in February 2010. For the reasons discussed in the staff report and the EIS-EIR, staff recommends that the board find that the public interest and necessity require the project, that the project has been planned and located in the manner that would be most compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury, the property interests sought to be acquired are necessary for the project, the acquisition offer has been made in compliance with Government Code Section 7267.2. An appraisal was obtained to determine the market value of the property interest required. A written offer was made to the property owner for the full amount of just compensation. An effort was made to negotiate an acceptable purchase price with the owners, but agreement was not reached. Because of the imminent need to acquire the property interest for the Exposition Light Rail Project, Staff recommends acquisition of the parcel through eminent domain.
Thank you. We have one person who wishes to be heard on item 6D. That is John Peterson.
Good afternoon, honorable members of the board and board chair. My name is John Peterson. I am a condemnation lawyer. I represent Associated International Marketing, owners of the subject property. And to clarify, an offer was made. Our view certainly is that it was not sufficient. Velma and her staff, the entire Expo staff, they're fine people. They're professionals. But in this case, we do disagree. A little bit of history on this property. It was acquired many, many years ago by my clients. It was an underimproved property. They went through the process in the city of Santa Monica, obtained all the entitlements, were enabled to demolish the old improvement, put up this nice four-story commercial office building, and it does generate nice income from them. So here, many, many years later, as they're enjoying the fruits of their efforts, Expo is coming to take the property. We understand that. That's the way it works. But in terms of the appraisal and the offer that was made, it was a generic type appraisal. It was outside of appraisers, so we understand it wasn't an in-house appraiser. But when we come back, after we go through the judicial process, I'm sure we will probably either strike something. We would hope to be able to strike something, and we're going to come back hopefully with a recommendation by staff for a different amount. We just want to be dealt with fairly as we go through this process, and that is why I'm here. Thank you.
All right.
Much.
Appreciate it. I was going to make the comment that...
I'm sorry?
I said I was going to make the comment that nothing precludes us and you and your client from negotiating while this process is going on. So there's not necessarily a foregone conclusion that it's going to end up in court if we can reach some kind of accommodation in the interim, which would be the best for all parties. So appreciate that.
Appreciate
the spirit which you brought that to our attention. Are there any questions? Comments? If not, is there a motion to approve the staff recommendation? Moved by Wesson. Second by Koretz. Without objection, so ordered. Next item is 6E. Public hearing on that item.
The purpose of this public hearing is to determine the necessity for the acquisition of the parcel identified as Los Angeles County Assessor Parcel Number 4313-001-009 and 4313-001-030, more commonly known as 10100 National Boulevard in the city of Los Angeles. My comment on this would be the exact same as on the previous. If the board, do I have to read the entire again?
Read it again.
Okay. The staff report addressed the following questions: whether the public interest and necessity require the project, whether the project is planned and located in the manner that would be most compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury, whether the property interest is necessary for the proposed project, and whether an offer was made to the owner of record. The staff report has been given to the board secretary for inclusion in the official record of this public hearing. The parcel included in this action is required for the construction and operation of a traction power substation and related uses in connection with the construction and operation of the Expo Light Rail Transit Project Phase 2. The light rail project will provide significant improvement in transportation and attendant access to economic opportunities for low-income, elderly, and transit-dependent persons living in the Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Westside area. The environmental effects associated with the acquisition and construction of the Expo Light Rail Project were evaluated in the final environmental impact report and environmental impact statement, which was certified by the board in February 2010. For the reasons discussed in the staff report and the EIR-EIS, staff recommend that the board finds that the public interest and necessity require the project. The project has been planned and located in the manner that would be most compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury. The property interest sought to be acquired are necessary for the project. The acquisition offer has been made in compliance with Government Code Section 7267.2. An appraisal was obtained to determine the fair market value of the property interest required. A written offer was made to the property owners for the full amount of just compensation. An effort was made to negotiate an acceptable purchase price with the owners, but agreement was not reached. Because of the imminent need to acquire the property interest for the Exposition Light Rail project, staff recommends acquisition of the parcels through eminent domain.
We have one person who's asked to be heard, Mr. Ted Sennett.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Supervisor. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, council members and distinguished board members. I represent the owners of the property in question, and we have two concerns, two objections. First, to the adequacy of the appraisal statement that was provided. We were given minimal notice. We had requested copies of the appraisals. We were not given copies of appraisals. We were told there were two appraisals obtained by Expo, and we were provided with a summary of one, and that summary was wholly inadequate. So I would object to the appraisal statement, object to the lack of notice, and I do not believe that the appraisal statement is proper or in good faith. Having said that, I would also object to possibly the extent of the taking. There were two plans given to my client, one of which shows the boundary of the taking to be under one of my client's buildings by a small amount. It would create an encroachment and a necessary impediment, and to the extent that was to go forward, it would be seriously prejudicial and harmful and unnecessary for the purpose of Expo. So I would ask that a survey be taken so that we can locate the boundary relative to the building in question so we can avoid an encroachment on that point. And my request would be a continuance of the hearing on the resolution so that we would have adequate time to obtain our own appraisal, which we've done at the request of Expo. We are in the process of obtaining that, and so that we can negotiate a fair settlement, and in the meantime also resolve this issue of the potential encroachment, which again I don't believe is necessary for the purpose of the taking, which is a power substation. So to the extent the area of the taking can be, the lot line can be adjusted so as not to create an encroachment, which would even more seriously undermine the value of my client's property, I would say that's my request.
You want to respond, Bill?
Yes, the boundary for the take has been done to exclude any portion of the building. The parcel plat that's attached to the board report excludes the portion of the building that encroaches on the adjacent parcel, the parcel that we're seeking to acquire.
Okay, he doesn't believe that.
Yes, if you look at the plat that is attached to the report and the resolution, it does not locate the boundaries of the building. And I was provided with, my client was provided with a plan, two plans, one of which does show the boundary, the proposed boundary of the taking area is it overlaps the outline of the building on this plan.
Okay, stop for a second, Mr. Senator. Let's see if she responds to that. Can you see what he's looking at?
Yes, which is your outline. This is your property line here.
No, this is the area which you're taking, and this is an outline of the building. This does not have an outline of the building on parcel two. It shows the outline of parcel two, but it doesn't show where my client's building is located.
The surveyors who prepared the legal and the parcel plats took every effort to exclude the area under the building, and we can work with you.
Okay, let me ask Mr. Thorpe. He may have.
No, I was about to say the same thing. It's clearly our intent to avoid that building, and we will work with the property owner and his counsel to make sure they're satisfied.
If we're going to move forward with the resolution today, then can we specify that the resolution includes the condition that the building is excluded from the area subject to the eminent domain?
I don't think you have to make note of in the resolution, because the legal description, we will work to their satisfaction to know that the legal that we are adopting and the parcel plat excludes the building.
I think that can just be direction to staff.
That consider a direction to the staff.
Well, just for the record, I would note that if the taking does create an encroachment, that that would be objectionable to the property owner and would be an unnecessary taking.
When you say an encroachment, you mean on the building?
It would create the building encroaching upon the easement area, and would and if you put a wall there, you would have to demolish part of my client's building. So I would not want to take.
Okay.
I would not want, even if you were to change the location of your wall legally, the Expo would own the property underneath my client's building, which would not be necessary. And I just think that if there's any question whatsoever.
Well, they wouldn't own the property under your client's building. It would be adjacent to your client's building.
No, as I pointed out.
Go ahead, Belmont. The drawing that he has is different. It's marked as a draft. It's different from the one that is attached to the resolution. The one attached to the resolution excludes, in our mind, in our surveyor's mind, the portion of the building that is encroaching on this parcel. The way the parcel is set, there are two parcels. One of the buildings on the parcel that we are not acquiring encroached into the property that we are acquiring. We have moved the property line for the piece that we are to acquire to exclude the building.
Okay.
And that's what's shown on the exhibit.
Okay.
Just for the record, it is not shown on the drawing, nor is the surveyor here to state his intent. So
okay, but I think we've stated the intent, and we've directed the staff consistent with that objective. Okay, Mr. Koretz.
Two questions. One, is there any reason why we wouldn't do that as a formal motion so that it's crystal clear that this has to happen?
I would appreciate that. I think that's the least one can do in a considering this is a constitutional protected right. You have the right to take the property and pay just compensation, but you only have the right to take what's necessary. So I think the resolution should be crystal clear.
Mr. Chairman, I would be reluctant to amend the resolution. We believe that we've surveyed the property, we've excluded the building, and we will be happy to prove that to council, but I would be reluctant to amend
okay.
the resolution.
Let me ask this question. Ultimately, if there's no resolution between us and the property owner, does this ever come back to us? This acquisition,
Well, for final settlement, if we settle, or it would move on to the court through the court process.
Okay. If it goes to court, does it ever come back to us?
Well, just the amount.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand your reticence to change the resolution at this point in time. I would encourage us to proceed with this with the direction to staff that they are not, the building is not to be, what's the terminology, encroached upon?
Encroached.
Okay. And if, after you've met with Mr. Sennett or his client, you are not able to prove to him or he is able to convince you that you're wrong, then bring this back at the next meeting so that we can discuss it.
Okay. I think what Mr. Thorpe is asking is that the resolution not be conditioned upon that, that it be adopted as presented.
Understood.
But if
for some reason,
yes.
After you take a magnifying glass to the map and talk to the surveyor or talk to Mr. Sennett, you're convinced that, whoops, he was right, we were wrong,
right.
Then I want you to bring it back at the next
yes.
meeting.
We would do that before it's filed.
All right.
May I also have the... And I appreciate your time and consideration. I respectfully request that staff be directed to obtain a survey of not only the boundary of the property, but the location of the buildings, an accurate survey so that that's not an additional cost that the property owner has to incur. That be done forthwith and provided to me within a reasonable period.
I don't know what they're...
We have surveyors. Somas has been retained, and they have prepared the legal... I think, would be able to verify if the property line that we have outlined is outside of the building. I'm not sure it's necessary to hire an additional surveyor to go out and do that.
So Somas is fine as long as Somas gives us a survey locating the footprint of the building on the plat map, and they signed, wet sealed that survey. I'm very happy with Sony.
I think she's said that that's what we're doing.
That's the process that they wrote the legal.
Okay, that'll be direction to staff as well. Yeah, Paul.
One other question, in if this negotiation is still going on, is there any reason why we wouldn't provide the property owner with the valuation of the property?
I didn't hear you, sir.
The appraisal.
It's not our policy to release the appraisals. We meet the statutory requirement of providing a summary of the appraisal that we use for just compensation.
And I've read the law. It says that the owner is to be provided with the appraisal. It doesn't say a summary of the appraisal. Moreover, you've obtained two appraisals, and those appraisals are typically produced to property owners during litigation. It's not my desire to go to litigation. I want a fair settlement, and I think that requires – I think that – in this case, where the request has been made that the appraisals of both appraisers should be provided, it should be an open, fair, they're public records, and they should be disclosed without my having to file a lawsuit. Because I quite honestly don't want to file a lawsuit if I don't have to. I support
well,
it.
I'm not sure they are a public record, are they?
Yeah.
I think that's the proprietary or confidential information.
If we're not in litigation, and it's prepared by a public entity.
Okay, I'll have our counsel respond.
Yeah, I would appreciate an opinion of counsel on this.
Mr. Chair, it is our opinion that the provision of the summary is legally compliant. There is no legal requirement to provide any more than has been provided in this case.
Have we ever done that before?
No.
Well, that's the same as someone saying, I only have an obligation to produce 2 years' tax returns, notwithstanding the fact that I'm a public official running for the highest office in the land. It's a bit disingenuous.
Well, it's not exactly the same, Mr. Senate, and I think you know the difference.
If we've only provided one of them, should we not provide a summary of both of them that we have in our possession?
Did you hear the question?
No, I did.
If we have two that have been done, why are we only providing a summary of one?
We get two appraisals. We have our in-house review appraiser review the appraisal, and we are only obligated to establish just compensation based on one appraisal. We get two so that we are sure that we have some balance and some counterbalance as to the appraisal that we've obtained. We're then required to do a summary of that appraisal to present to the owner. We do not release the appraisals. Once the case goes into condemnation, there is a process where we will get an update, and there is a mandatory exchange of appraisals during the condemnation process. We would hope, and we've offered to them to pay the $5,000 that the California requires us to pay to help them get an appraisal. But we're not required to release ours during this phase of the negotiation. And it's our policy not to do so.
Director Kratz, maybe I could help a little bit. We fully intend to continue to negotiate with the property owner and its counsel, and disclosure of information that isn't required may not be in the best interest of the authority.
Seems like it'd be easier to do it without litigation, but
well, hopefully there won't be litigation. Hopefully they'll come to a resolution.
We will be happy to review the information that they provide from their appraisal and negotiate, and if we're able to reach an agreement, we will come back to the board for that administrative settlement prior to.
And we're required to ultimately pay a fair price based on our own appraisal information.
We're required to pay fair market value based on an appraisal.
Of our own.
Well, it can be theirs, too. If their appraisal point out some information that was not clear in ours or that we think is has relevance, we can request an amendment or a revised just compensation.
So what we offer is based on one of the appraisals in the process?
On the combination of review of both of the appraisals and determining which appraiser represented the best value of the property.
Okay. So with the direction to staff that's been previously discussed, are you done with your questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Wesson will move. Barnard will second. Not objection. Enter his vote to approve the resolution.
resolution. If there's a issue on the building, you come back at the next meeting if he's right. In the unlikely event that he's right. Just a joke, Mr. Seth. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate your input and time. Can we abbreviate the director's of this report, the monthly report?
Oh, the monthly report?
Yeah.
Absolutely, we can defer it until next month.
Our members here, we have several closed session items that we need to address.
So shall we defer it till next month, or you want a real quick one?
Is there anything that we need to know this month?
No.
You should bring us up to date on
the only track. Thing, yeah, that we were going to talk a little bit about was the junction, and maybe Eric can just bring you up to speed on issues relating to the PUC requirement that we replace the frog at the junction and the agreement to hire a track work expert, which has been done. So, Eric, maybe you can bring him up to speed.
Based on the letter from the PUC that basically asked for action on the switch point frog, we met with both PUC and Metro, and basically we jointly decided the best way to look at the situation was to have an independent track work expert hired to come and look at the junction and basically evaluate it for compliance with Metro criteria and general railroad standards, and then to make recommendations of any potential fixes. We established a joint committee that consisted of ourselves, Metro, and PUC. We went through a selection process to find the track work experts. We shortlisted to a firm and two individuals based on our evaluation and interviews. We selected the firm Zeta Tech and two representatives that they had to serve as the track work experts. One of the representatives was actually down here this week, did the field and site assessment. He's taken that information back with him now. They're going to go back and look at this information, discuss it. We expect an informal recommendation probably sometime towards the end of this month, beginning of next, and then a formal draft recommendation sometime in the middle of next month. So we'll report back to you anything that we find out at the next board meeting.
Go to closed session.
Yes, Mr. Chair, item 10, A, B, and C are conferences with legal counsel regarding pending litigation under Section 54956.9, Subdivision A of the Government Code. We do not anticipate reportable.